Good afternoon, everybody, or good morning, depending on where you're calling in from. My name is Melissa Campanelli. I'm the Editor-in-Chief of Retail Online Integration, and welcome, if you haven't already been to some of the sessions, welcome to the 2014 Retail Marketing Virtual Conference and Expo. I'm pleased to welcome you to our 125 session, which is Beacons and the Future of Mobile Shopping. Many retailers today are experimenting with in-store beacons, which are Bluetooth-enabled devices that communicate with shoppers' smartphones by sending them relevant ads, coupons, information, and more to bridge the digital and physical shopping worlds. Consumers who opt in to receive such messaging can get great deals and valuable information, while retailers can collect all important customer data. To learn more about the beacon technology, including how it works and how it's changing the future of mobile shopping, we're excited for you to listen in today to our lively panel discussion featuring Maya Mikolov, the Executive Vice President and Co-Founder of GP Shopper, and Ryan Bonifacino, the VP of Digital Strategy at Alex and Annie. And they're going to talk about beacons and how they've been implemented in some of their customers or their programs and et cetera. So before we get started, let me review some technical pointers for you. So first, if you have any technical issues, troubleshoot by clicking on the widget at the bottom of the console marked with a question mark, or let us know via the question and answer box. You can also use the question and answer box to submit your questions to today's panelists. We'll be addressing select ones at the end of the session if we have time, but you can send them in at any time. And please make sure to turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so that you can use all the features on this console. And check out the Tips for Attendees widget if you'd like to learn more about the console you're viewing on today. And finally, if you'd like to view this session again later, remember that we'll be archiving the entire show, and we'll have the on-demand environment up and running for 3 months beginning Monday, July 21st. So watch your email for more details on that. So to take us into the world of beacons, let me pass it on to our first speaker, Maya, and take it away.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for attending this webinar. First of all, what I'd like to do before we get into the discussion of beacons is just do a loose introduction on GP Shopper and why we are related to the beacon industry at all. GP Shopper is an integrated mobile platform. What that means is we allow retailers, brands, and their agencies to build on our SDK that contains over 200 retailer features, plus content management tools to manage those features, and the local analytics tool so they can analyze the performance of their mobile application. Recently, we introduced our Bluetooth-enabled beacon solution to the market, which includes not only the hardware for the beacons themselves, but an end-to-end management, campaign management, and beacon management tool. So what I'd like to talk to you today is a little bit about what beacons are, why they're used, and what are some of the things to watch out for as you're looking to experiment or implement a beacon solution. First of all, the first question is, what are beacons? Well, as previously described, beacons are basically devices that use Bluetooth 4.0 to communicate with other devices, be it mobile apps in this example, or it can be a mobile app communicating to a mobile device communicating to a mobile device using Bluetooth 4.0. Why Bluetooth 4.0 is so interesting is it's become an evolution on Bluetooth. What that means is, if any of you remember, that there have obviously been Bluetooth-enabled devices, going back to Jawbone Technologies and other Bluetooth-enabled devices that have been in the market for years. However, from a marketer's point of view, those were not as useful, as most carriers had disabled Bluetooth on consumer handsets, and consumers were not turning on their Bluetooth. So marketers were very limited in the type of Bluetooth marketing that they could do. Fast forward to Bluetooth 4.0 and fast forward to Apple announcing iOS 7 last year, which enabled Bluetooth on all iOS devices. All of a sudden, you have a willing install base of over 300 million devices that you can Bluetooth advertise for. In addition, Android devices 4.3 and above, OS 4.3 and above, can also support Bluetooth messaging in the SDK. So what you see here is a sampling of what Bluetooth devices can look like. As you can see, they come in very many form factors. Some of them are large, some of them are plug-in, many of them are battery-operated. Some of them are very well-designed, like the Estimote beacon. Some of them are very small, some of them are quite larger, depending on the battery size in them. One thing to note about these battery-powered devices is usually their lifespan ranges from anywhere from 6 months, ours range to about a year. If you have a larger device that supports a larger battery, the Bluetooth device could range in lifespan to up to 5 years. What's interesting is now there are plug-in models, such as the one you see here on the left, which is provided by PayPal, and as a plug-in model, obviously battery life is not a concern. But many of you have probably heard about iBeacon and Apple talking about iBeacon and wonder, well, what is an iBeacon versus beacon? Is it a specific type of beacon? Is it a specific type of hardware? Well, actually, iBeacon refers to a protocol. It's not a specific hardware. What does that mean? Well, if you think about it, to use a slightly dated but accurate analogy, it's like beta versus VHS. It's a protocol for delivering movies and communicating those films. In this case, it's a protocol with communicating wirelessly with these devices. However, recently, as early as this week, Apple, there are some leaked documents that Apple is petitioning the FCC to have perhaps its own hardware device that would be installed in point of sale. So this is a very exciting development also, but it seems like Apple is not only having the software standards business, but perhaps also getting into the hardware business. Another interesting point with Apple is they are, in fact, as these software developers like to say, eating their own dog food. What does that mean? That means that they have installed these beacon devices in their store and are using these beacon devices to communicate interactive messaging to consumers who walk into their stores. They are doing so vis-a-vis their mobile application, so it's important to note, and they're asking consumers to opt into this specific experience. But we'll talk more about that later. How does this BLE, or Bluetooth Low Energy, compare to other technology? Well, the two technologies that have already been in the market for a while are NFC and Wi-Fi. NFC is just a global term for saying near-field communication, although if you ask some people in the near-field communications market, it also stands for something perhaps a little bit more comical. The fact of the matter is NFC requires both hardware support on the device, meaning that your phone actually has to have a chip that will read the NFC, and it has a hardware also installed in the store. Because of that, it clearly doesn't see as big of an install base because not as many phones, such as, you know, there are a couple of Samsungs out there and a couple of other Android phones that support the NFC protocol. So it's not as popular or ubiquitous as Bluetooth is becoming. Also, Bluetooth beacons can be configured, meaning that whereas NFC only works if you hover a device very close to a reader, beacon devices can be configured to near, intermediate, and far, meaning that marketers have more options as to the broadcast range of the actual beacon. Finally, NFC hardware is a bit more expensive to set up. Now let's look at Wi-Fi. Well, obviously, some retailers have Wi-Fi in stores and some haven't. As such, there are systems out there that can use the Wi-Fi systems to create this kind of hyper-localized marketing in much the same way that beacons can. But there are a couple of very, very key differences. First of all, many of these Wi-Fi marketing systems require on grabbing a device's MAC address, that is their hardware address. Now, Apple wasn't very keen on this process, and with the release of iOS 8, they're actually not going to make that, they're going to make that address dynamic, which means if you have a Wi-Fi marketing system and before you were able to track customers in stores because you knew the actual hardware device ID that the customer had, that ID will no longer be provided to you. It will be dynamic. So beacons actually require explicit opt-in, and beacon programs require explicit opt-in, which we think is very pro-consumer and pro-positive marketing. You don't want to say to a consumer, hey, just because you walked into our store and didn't explicitly turn your phone off or leave it at home, you have opted into this program. We don't think that consumers in the long run will accept such behavior. Also, again, BLE beacons are very low energy consumption. In fact, getting Facebook alerts in background takes significantly more battery power than interacting with a beacon environment in store. And finally, if you don't have Wi-Fi enabled in your stores, the cost of this Wi-Fi implementation can be significantly higher than tossing a couple of beacons in a storefront. Why are marketers getting so excited over beacons? Well, the answer is very clear. For any of you who are marketers, and especially those of you who may have customers that are millennials, you'll realize that this is your customer. They are looking down. They do not look up. They tweet, they Instagram, they Snapchat, they Facebook, but what they're not doing is looking up at displays. What they're not doing is looking up at their surroundings. Because of that, you have a problem with a distracted consumer. And this distracted consumer, though, their power can be harnessed. If they're already looking at their screen, then why not give them the messaging to the screen that they are looking at in stores? This is why beacons are very interesting to marketers, because you can also bridge the in-store and digital experience, meaning that you can start making your stores interactive and personalized. Whereas before, everybody walked into the entrance of your store and may have gotten an SMS or a geo-specific push notification that just says, hey, here's a coupon. Now you can start segmenting your audience and knowing based on their purchase history, for example, if you integrate with a CRM system, that, hey, I'm going to tell this person that there are new jeans in stock because they tend to buy jeans from us. Or, hey, this is a loyalty customer. I'm going to give them an offer that's not even being advertised in the store. All of a sudden, stores become a very personalized place, just like online. Finally, there's a ton of data available for real-world actions, i.e. the big data that everybody likes to talk about. Beacons can be used to heat map stores and to provide flow paths and flow path information of how your consumers are actually interacting with your stores. Finally, I'd like to quickly talk about what are the three major concerns around beacons. Well, the first is privacy. Is this an opt-in experience? The proper beacon experience should always be opt-in. That means that you're specifically asking your customers on their devices, do you opt into this experience, and specifically allowing them to opt out. Again, we talked about MAC address sniffing, which is hardware address sniffing. I could talk about this for hours in privacy concerns, but suffice it to say, you should not be sniffing hardware IDs off your consumer devices without their permission. Finally, with privacy policies, you have to be clear with the consumer of what information is being gathered. Security, what are the beacons broadcasting? Well, a smart beacon program means that the beacon is only broadcasting its ID, meaning if someone stole a beacon, they won't necessarily can't use it for nefarious purposes. A beacon solution that requires a software or server installation in your store, or a beacon solution that requires read-write capabilities, meaning that the beacon can both read information from the device and also broadcast information from the device, can be less secure. So it's important to know that your beacons are only broadcasting one way. Finally, management, and this is a huge headache for anyone who manages many storefronts. It's easy to manage beacons in a lab. It's very hard to manage beacons when you think about, you know, it's easy to manage 10 beacons. It's hard to think about a rollout of how are you going to manage 100, 1,000, 10,000 beacons. That's why when you're looking at beacon implementation, you have to ask yourself who in the market offers a comprehensive program for understanding where the beacons are, what the health of the beacons are, what the campaign management is, because those are concerns that you're going to have to think about and roll out. And briefly, I wanted to talk about what beacons can be used for, although I'm really going to let Ryan talk about his specific use cases more. A couple of use cases that we thought of here is that to give shoppers exclusive content. You don't always have to be pushing promotions. You can simply give them exclusive content such as videos, such as lookbooks, et cetera. You can also offer in-store promotions, of course. It's a great use case for CPG and groceries. Beacons can even tell you how long a beacon campaign can be configured against dwell time, meaning if I'm standing in front of an aisle of peanut butter for over 3 minutes, maybe I can't decide what peanut butter I want, and that's a good opportunity to use the beacon to trigger and offer a campaign. Finally, we believe that the strongest case with beacons is integration with a CRM or loyalty program. And beacons can also be used in reporting mode only, meaning that they can be used just to tell you more information about what's going on in your store. And what do you need to get started? Very simply, all you need to get started is you do need an app for that. Although some people have been experimenting with beacons to Passbook, you're not going to get as much information about the consumer, and ultimately Passbook is also an application. So whether you're on iPhone or Android, you are going to need an app for that. Finally, you need use cases that make sense. Targeted messaging for the sake of running targeted messaging is not going to help. You have to provide utility and value to your consumers, and you need a management plan. As I said before, one beacon is easy. 10 beacons in the lab is easy. Managing 1,000-plus beacons is not so easy. So you have to make sure that you're not just thinking about the hardware, but you're thinking about the end-to-end solution that is managing the hardware, and that you have user-friendly privacy policies and opt-out policies. I really can't stress this enough. Any marketing program should be a positive marketing program, meaning it gives consumers the ability to opt out, and that's what beacons can do when executed properly. Now I'd like to turn it over to Ryan, who's the VP of Digital Strategy at Alice Nanny, who will tell you more about the specific experiences with beacons. Thank you.
That was a wonderful layup from the industry perspective on the technology. Thank you very much for the time, everybody, and happy to tell you a little more about the Alice Nanny story. Alice Nanny, for those of you who don't know the brand, we're a multi-channel retailer, meaning we have our own stores, a network of 40-plus stores. We have an online business, and we have a very robust wholesale business where we sell through other merchants like department stores. We're known for our charm bangles, and our products are highly customized, not in a engraving fashion, but at the SKU level. We have something for everybody. So whether it's an individual's zodiac sign or birthstone or favorite NFL team or initial, we have it. And our core message when it comes to the styling or accessorizing of one's wrist is to stack these individual charm bangles in a way that represents who they are. So for a company that has its roots in personalization, as you can imagine, we have big initiatives in the digital side of personalization. So we are one of the fastest growing retailers in the world, and we have a very forward-thinking digital strategy, which is actually part of a centralized unit, Alice Nanny Digital, that includes our e-commerce business and also the support of other channels, our own stores and our wholesale business through digital efforts. And that's the team I oversee. So with regard to beacon technology, as I mentioned, being very forward-thinking, we identified just the general technology, Bluetooth Low Energy, as described earlier, as an overall concept that we wanted to explore. And as we went to explore BLE as well as the competing technologies, we identified BLE as a technology that emerged as something that piqued our interest. And we continued to test. And what we did was we found out where the money was going from the venture side, who was getting who were recipients of venture money on the provider side, so the hardware of BLE technology, as well as software. So these the software opportunities, of course, would be primarily app-driven, so aggregators that were taking advantage of the software and the hardware connectivity. And we decided to pilot very basic installation with a couple beacons in a couple of our stores, and we looked at the data, and we learned. We didn't take a too big of a risk in learning because we got multiple parties involved. We checked the box with privacy and technology integration and so on, and we ultimately built a business case. And at the time, it was a big question, can we use beacon technology to drive new people into stores and better the shopping experience as it relates to discovering the brand? So brand education meets driving demand generation. And ultimately, we realized that, yes, that's great. However, there's only so many people you can get into a store based on physical proximity. So then we started to think about it a little more, and we looked at our customers, and we found something very obvious. Our customers are very social. So one of the main drivers in getting people into a store is keeping them in a store and having them come back at a higher rate. We have a very unique problem, and not many brands have this problem. We're a giftable product. And in Q4, a lot of our stores have very long lines. Oftentimes, the lines go out the door, and our stores are only so small, or so large, rather. So we thought about the best way to educate consumers as they're waiting in line, for instance, in Q4, to purchase their products or even get knowledge or education from a sales associate. And we came up with a handful of concepts. But the one particular use case, outside of driving demand, was bettering the customer experience as it relates to brand education through social imagery. So when we release an app in Q4 directly to our customers, so it'll be an Alice Nanny app, the app will take advantage of the physical installation and connectivity that we have between our devices, between our beacon devices and the app, to allow us to power experiences that are relative to that individual's location within the store itself. So imagine, you know, take the charity line that we have, for example. It's called Charity by Design. One of our partners within that particular unit of the company is an organization we call Stand Up to Cancer. So imagine a gift giver, they're waiting to see an associate, and they're in front of the Charity by Design display case. And within the app, they're able to see, based on obviously our ability to know where they are in the particular store, they're able to see information related to that particular product. In addition, they're able to see the stories associated with that product that we source from our own customer base, as well as all the social imagery associated with that product. So it could be the Stand Up to Cancer bangle, amongst many other bangles, on somebody's wrist on Instagram that we feed in and moderate from the back end. So that from soup to nuts, that's the discovery of the concept, the pilot, as well as the future experience as it relates to Alex and Ani.
Great. Actually, I just wanted to quickly jump in, Ryan, because we have some slides up here that talk about some of the what the app actually looks like and how I think part of your testing involved offers to folks. Can you talk a little bit about that, how the offers worked and what the results were? So, for instance, you know, the slide that we have up is talking about a Bangle of the Month program that you started where you had 20% off. I'm assuming that this is what the user had when they went into the store. So if you could just kind of walk us
Absolutely.
Through how that works.
So from a demand generation perspective, the pilot that you're reviewing right now on the screen, this is a timed response or timed message that prompted the user to show up at a store to redeem an offer. And as we were going through our pilot, the different types of pilots we were running, each pilot required each test within the pilot required a business case. So the demand generation side, you know, answers the fundamental question, are we able to drive new customers into a store who wouldn't have discovered the brand otherwise? And when we back that into what we call lift, true lift, it's looking at the incremental layer of new customers that are walking into a store and purchasing a product that wouldn't have purchased otherwise. And the only way to truly get that information outside of referencing, you know, statistics and looking at little sample sizes is understanding when redemptions happen at the point of sale. How are you taking that information and comparing it against what normally happens? And that's a concept that that the industry or we do, and I think a lot within the industry, just called new-to-file. So to understand what a new-to-file customer is, you have to have your data, your customer data, centralized. And a lot of retailers don't have that. So that's kind of a foundational or fundamental issue that I believe we have to address as an industry. So very simply put, you know, everybody talks about, you know, the omni-channel concept. And and when people say omni-channel, they talk about the blending of your stores and your online business. I believe omni-channel goes the whole way around. So when somebody discovers your brand at perhaps the wholesale level, how are you making assumptions about who they are and how they discovered you as it relates to the crossover effect when they become addicted to your product because they discovered you at, say, a Bloomingdale's and then ended up buying direct? So understanding what new-to-file really is a long journey within itself.
Mm-hmm. So obviously this technology has enabled you to do that.
Absolutely. So at the point of sale, we're looking at the timestamps at redemption to understand who that customer really is. So the great thing about us is, you know, we're a company that we make all of our products in America, and I mentioned the commitment to charity, and we also have a commitment to what I'll call sort of an overarching, you know, being sustainable and eco-friendly. So within stores, and this was kind of an accident for us, within our stores, we committed a few years back, and we're a relatively young company, a few years back we committed to paperless receipts, and that resulted in an extremely high capture rate of email addresses at the point of sale. Not that when people submit their email addresses at the cash register or with our mobile POS, we send them marketing emails. It just allows us to do the analysis. And when we go through these, or we went through these series of pilots with Swirl Networks, the provider of the beacons a year ago, we were able to timestamp those individual redemptions against our POS system, which also included the analysis of how many people are coming from online and discovering us and purchasing in the store, which don't count as new to file. So it allowed for us at the time, and it does right now, to look at true incrementality as it relates mm-hmm. to driving additional traffic in a store.
Great. Well, I mean, that's really great detail that you went into. I'm going to actually we only have about looks like about 5 minutes for questions. So I want to jump into that. So let's do that instead of going to my next slide. We do have a question that has come in around beacons working for like service related needs. Do you guys have any examples there? Where, you know, obviously we're talking about marketing and kind of overall, but what are some examples? I don't know, maybe Maya, you have some examples of using beacons for social or how they could be used. I'm sorry, for service industries.
Sure. I think for service industry, there's a lot of interesting things that can be done from beacons. Depending on what type of service industry, let's just take a spa, for example, or a wellness center. Beacons can also be used as part of, again, tracking where a customer is within the service cycle if they are at a point of location. It can also be used to provide local contextual information. So recently I was in, admittedly, in the Ritz at Half Moon Bay, and they have a gorgeous large spa facility there. And they have, you know, some places that are dedicated to schools and some places that are dedicated to massage and some places that are dedicated to health, such as nutrition and yoga. So you can offer more information, such as class schedules or such as perhaps your individual personalized schedule as you go through that experience. So I think in service, you have to think about it is how does it provide additional utility that is contextually relevant to that location in much the same way as products.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see that. It's a similar sort of use. It's just for a service versus a product. this is an interesting question, and maybe I can address this to you, Ryan. How have customers reacted to beacons or your customers? I mean, have you done any surveys regarding customer experience or just general feelings, anecdotal feelings?
Absolutely. So, as part of the pilot process, in each phase, we did some studies. One was qualitative, so asking customers as part of the usability testing and the acceptance testing on the consumer level what their thoughts were, and it also helped us understand the actual user experience or user interface required to do it the right way. And this is in regards to our own consumer app that we continue to test. Mm-hmm. So we're in a beta right now. And we are releasing that particular app in Q4. But that doesn't prevent us from taking advantage of third-party partnerships that are a lot are very forward-thinking in terms of their endorsement of, you know, sort of location-based bidding opportunities or advertising opportunities. So sometimes you're confined to someone else's experience. And that really depends on our ability to provide the assets the right way and get them into the creative, the production process. And, you know, a lot of our testing is, you know, is it, you know, a discount that we're going to apply to the product or is it, you know, an education that we're going to provide? But on the technology itself, we believe as, you know, as early adopters with, you know, innovative technologies as being one of the first to adopt this, we were the first fashion retailer to do a nationwide rollout. We believe that commitment to innovation should also be balanced with the commitment to not only privacy, but educating the consumer in advance of skipping through that step. So you always see this, you know, do you accept the terms, and you see the tracking information buried into a link under, you know, privacy policy. We believe in educating the consumer, telling them that they can understand in an easy to illustrate manner what it is that we're looking to do, and if they want to opt in or even opt out of absolutely everything, we believe that it's not a rare statement that a marketer will make, but we believe it'll lead to a tremendous amount of loyalty because we are educating consumers along mm-hmm. the way. So we believe that there is that balance, and we certainly want to be the example of a retailer or brand that's doing it the right way, as opposed to, you know, the discussions that have been and are continuing to take place down in D.C. regarding privacy.
Yeah. Let's see. We have time for one more question. And a lot of our listeners are smaller companies, so I guess this is sort of a shout out to those folks. I mean, you know, is this kind of a program, even if you have like one store, say, and you know, a website, or you have a warehouse or something, and you want to use it for service applications? I mean, is this something that is doable for a small company, or is it really, you know, a larger endeavor? And that's for either. I guess maybe for Maya. You have a variety of customers, I'm sure.
I would say that a one-store location, it might be a little bit challenging because, as I said before, Beacons and part of what makes Beacons so interesting is that they interact with mobile applications. So if you were to decide to build your own mobile application, obviously you have to take that price into consideration and what the purpose of that application is. Hopefully it's not just a Beacon reading application. That wouldn't be very interesting for consumers. You can use Beacons to interact with Passbook, which is something that's already installed. But, again, I would hesitate to say, okay, I'm just going to put a Beacon into this one-store location, especially if it's a very typically small store, as I think that there might be more efficient ways to get that messaging across, whether it be geo-targeted push notifications, et cetera. There might be a little bit more effective methodology. I think when you're starting to talk about multiple stores, across multiple regions, there are very interesting possibilities, even if each store had one Beacon. For example, you can run weather-specific campaigns that if it's sunny down in Miami but raining up in New York, you can have one Beacon in each store, but when customers interact with that Beacon, they're getting location-specific messaging. That would make it very interesting, and you don't need a lot of Beacons to do that. So I think it really depends on the appetite to do some of these other digital programs or participate in some of these other digital programs.
Okay. Great.
And just to briefly add to that, Nani, we were a small business not so long ago. We were one store less than 4 years ago, and now we're literally the fastest-growing multi-channel retailer in the world. And it wasn't because of Beacon, obviously, but it was that commitment to growth and innovation and learning. So everybody on the call right now, you're learning and understanding, you know, what are the baby steps required to intelligently and comfortably have the conversation when we're talking about acronyms like DLE. What are the alternatives to investing in opportunities in a way that would allow you to get perhaps additional exposure at the store level. So look at some of the, you know, the steps that the big brands are making, you know, perhaps a, you know, Foursquare or a, you know, a Yelp in the future. Looking at Shopkick, you know, those sort of alternatives that not only allow you to take advantage of low-cost physical hardware, but also get additional exposure to customers that perhaps normally wouldn't have discovered you otherwise, but they just so happen to be using an app that has a large user base in an area where you have stores. So there's a lot of advantages to just being knowledgeable. And it doesn't have to be a large commitment or a large investment. This is very simple, fundamental technology. And if it's overwhelming, my simple and last piece of advice is, you know, grab an intern, grab your nephew right out of college and ask him, give them an internship to write a report on it and how it relates to, you know, out of business school, of course, but how it relates to your business. So foundational stuff, this is a great first step to start to understand the use of the technology and how it can benefit even the smallest of businesses.
Yep, that's kind of what we were hoping. We were hoping to give a nice overview with some case studies, which I hope was helpful to everybody. And I really appreciate your time and your willingness to share your information, both of you guys. So anyway, I think without further ado, we're going to have to close up the session today. So I want to thank our wonderful speakers, Ryan Bonifacino and Maya Miklovich. I also want to thank everyone on the phone who's listening for attending the session. And if you're interested in discussing anything that you heard during this presentation, we encourage you to visit the networking lounge to chat with other session attendees and also visit the info booth and fill out our show survey to let us know about your experience today. And if you missed anything, remember the entire virtual show will be archived and the on-demand environment will be available for 3 months beginning Monday, July 21st. So have a great rest of the day, guys. Bye-bye.